Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends. It's Friday, December 4, about 8:30 in the morning. Time for a good look back at the news of the week. And we've got a lively panel on this week's roundtable. Sudeep Reddy, managing editor of Politico. Jen Bendery, congressional and White House correspondent for Huffington Post. And Hunter Walker, chief White House correspondent for Yahoo News. And today, as always, a lot to talk about. Donald Trump still refuses to acknowledge that he lost the election 1 month ago. So will he just refuse to leave the White House? Meanwhile, Joe Biden plows ahead, forming a new government. But will he ever get any cooperation from Congress? And will Santa deliver a presidential pardon from Daddy for Donnie, Eric, Ivanka, and Jared? Let's jump right in. I want to start with the breaking news from last night. Joe Biden announcing that his one of his first acts as president, he told Jake Tapper, CNN, will be to ask Americans to wear a mask for 100 days. Hunter, is this the first action of the new administration? Have we turned the corner?
It's a huge departure from the Trump administration. I mean, obviously, the president took a really long time to even be seen wearing a mask himself. Inside the White House, we've seen a pretty extensive outbreak with, you know, multiple events that featured large numbers of unmasked people indoors in close quarters. So this is a big deal. I had actually in the briefing room specifically asked if the president would consider a mask mandate, and, you know, basically got a non-answer. But Trump's own CDC has said that if everybody wore masks, you know, in a matter of weeks, I think 8 weeks, Director Redfield had said, this would go away. So if Trump's own CDC is correct, you know, this is a major thing that would lead to a major change.
Yeah, and Sudeep, I want to repeat, the president-elect said he would ask, not he would mandate. That's a change, isn't it?
That is a change. He had gotten a fair bit of blowback for the idea that there would be a mandate for anything or shutdowns or anything like that. You know, when I first heard this, I thought, wow, that's a twist on your first 100 days to ask people to do something they should be doing already. But it also just shows, like, the fact that this was news, how remarkable it has been for the last 9 months, that it's been difficult to get people to do this, and that we've somehow turned this entire exercise of keeping ourselves safe into a political division. So it was, I thought, a smart use of the first 100 days moniker. Since all people want at this point is to just get back to normal, that's probably not good for what Biden really wants in the long run, which is a mandate to enact much larger change. But, man, if we could just get back to normal after 100 days, that would be remarkable.
So, Jen, this comes on top of the news yesterday, the latest count, 14 million Americans now with COVID who've contracted the disease, 280,000 who've died from it. 100,000 Americans now in hospital beds with COVID, and now this announcement from Joe Biden. Does all of this increase the possibility that there will be a second COVID bill before Congress runs out of town again?
Well, it looks like the momentum is already building to get a deal through, because I think that congressional leaders realize how bad it will look if they go home in December without ever having done this, given how bad things are right now. So, yeah, so December is kind of a collision of different things coming together. It's the end of the year. Congress has to fund the government because funding's running out for that. And, of course, the COVID relief package is coming together finally. And part of the reason it's happening now is because it's the end of the year, and this is how Congress always gets anything done. They wait until the very last minute but you've got Joe Biden coming in with his new administration and his request that everybody wear a mask for 100 days. And you've got this COVID package coming together that is really, really badly needed. And a part of the problem with the delay in it is that all these benefits are going to run out in December that people are relying on through this crisis. So there's like unemployment benefits are going to run out for people. Unemployment bonuses are going to run out. There's an eviction moratorium that expires on December 31st. So yes, there is an incredible amount of momentum to do something here. And I think that if congressional leaders allowed everybody to go home at the end of the year, as COVID is spiking at new levels again, and all these benefits are about to run out, I think they have to pass something and they know it. So I think they will.
Does it look like, Jen, that the Democrats will accept a smaller bill than they originally wanted in order to come back for another bite at the apple after the first of the year?
Yeah, I think that's where things are headed. I mean, Pelosi has been holding off for months to try to get Republicans to come around on a massive bill that they want. That I don't think she ever thought they would swallow that bill, but it looks like they're centering on a $908 billion framework for a COVID relief package, which is about half of what Democrats wanted originally. But I think the whole point here was to get to a number that they could all agree on, and that is finally where they're at. So, but they're not, it's not a done deal yet. So don't, you know, I hesitate to say it's all done and everyone should breathe a sigh of relief, because it's not done until it's done. But
right,
it looks like you've got people on both sides of the aisle and in both chambers who are saying, hey, this could work. And that's the first for months of doing this. That's the first time I've seen this.
So meanwhile, Hunter, at the White House, on November 2nd, a couple of days ago, 30 days after the election for president, Donald Trump finally spoke out, and he gave his own little rant on, as everybody called it, in front of the cameras, where he gave his view on what happened on November 3rd. Here's just a little sample.
I want to provide an update on our ongoing efforts to expose the tremendous voter fraud and irregularities which took place during the ridiculously long November 3rd elections. We used to have what was called Election Day. Now we have election days, weeks and months, and lots of bad things happened during this ridiculous period of time. As president, I have no higher duty than to defend the laws and the Constitution of the United States. That is why I am determined to protect our election system, which is now under coordinated assault and siege.
It seems to me if it's under assault and siege, it's under assault and siege by the president of the United States. But Hunter, no sign of accepting reality yet.
Well, you know, he said something I think people on both sides of the aisle may be able to agree with. What a ridiculous month it has been. I was thinking this yesterday because it has been a month, at least since the beginning of the end of the election. You know, yesterday was the 1 month anniversary of Election Day. As we know, it was called basically 4 days later that weekend. So we are in the month-iversary moment. And, you know, the president, what struck me about this is he was making really, really incendiary, wild claims that in another environment where a head of state was doing this would be, you know, banner alarming headlines. And, you know, to an extent, this stuff has been shrugged off. It is not getting wall-to-wall coverage on TV. We did not see mass protests when the president sort of attempted a power grab. You know, Twitter is now marking this stuff, including that video, as you know, disputed content. And the president is also afraid to hold normal events at the White House. I mean, he hasn't faced the press. He was resorted to this little video. And so in terms of the venue, which was just a tweet, and the reception, it's almost like the president has been reduced to, you know, I think what ultimately is a very natural state for him, which is a fringe internet commenter.
Yeah. You know, I must say, on that point, the next morning, looked at the New York Times expecting it to be a banner headline on the front page, and the same with the Washington Post. And I had to dig inside the paper to find any mention of the president's speech. They really buried it, maybe rightfully so. So, Sudeep, how does all of this end? Any idea?
It's starting to look like the president is just going to keep this up over the next 2 months. Another important piece of information we got in the last day was that the Trump campaign and its related entities have raised $200 million since the election. It's just a mind-boggling sum of money, and that's what they're doing. This is basically a transfer of money from people who are gullible, who think that there's still hope, even after the election has been certified in most key states. And this is Trump really just building up, whether it's the next campaign or the next stage of his marketing campaign. He's just building up a war chest to keep it going. And that's really what this is all about, is the president just trying to get attention for that purpose. And I think in the short term, this probably doesn't have a whole lot of significance. Trump has indicated he's going to leave office. It's not clear yet whether he's going to actually be at the inauguration for the show of a peaceful transfer of power, but he's going to leave office while trying to do whatever he can in his final 50 days to make Joe Biden's job difficult. But I think there's a long tail on all of this. The degradation of confidence in our election system is just going to last for years and years. And we might see it in Georgia, in the Georgia special election, whether this actually depresses Republican turnout. But I think over the long run, we're going to see people be citing this this moment in crazier and crazier ways.
What do you think, Jen? Do you think Donald Trump will be at the inauguration, or maybe better question, do you think he'll be invited?
I think I read that Biden said, you know, he's welcome to come. He should come. They want to create a move away from chaos, like show a seamless transfer of power and resume the usual traditions we have as a democracy. But I just can't see him going. He's just too much of a sore loser. Like, he can't accept that he lost. And to sit there in the back as Biden is sworn in, I mean, I just don't see it. I think he's just going to take the position of a spoiler, and he's going to put as much energy as he can into delegitimizing the fact that Biden won and delegitimizing his administration, which is going to be terrible. I think that the inauguration day is just one very small piece of this. I think this is what he'll be doing now with all this money he's raised and with his inability to accept defeat. I think what he's going to continue doing is just trying to make it seem like Biden didn't actually win. And it's horrible. I feel like this should be the front page news every single day that this is happening. And it's like the frog boiling in water. We're just getting used to it. And Republicans aren't doing anything about it. So it's, you know, a handful of Republicans are saying it's time to move on. But even people like longtime senators, like Senator Roy Blunt, who was on TV on Sunday, he still could not bring himself to say that Joe Biden had won. I mean, it's ridiculous. We need to get back to this like core issue here. It's all the other news stories sprouting off from it, like, oh, well, will Trump show up at Inauguration Day or not? Or, well, you know, what was Trump's message in his video? It's like the guy's trying to undermine the legitimacy of democracy like every day. And it's really alarming. And the inauguration piece of it is just one small part of a much bigger, terrifying situation happening.
And Hunter, we know it was on Inauguration Day 2017 that Donald Trump filed for re-election. Right. There are rumors that he's going to file for re-election on Inauguration Day 2021.
I mean, he's certainly already made rumblings in that direction. As Sudeep pointed out, there's a lot of interesting fundraising activity going on with the Trump campaign. I'm actually registered for a lot of their different text messages and supporter emails, and it's turned into like, you know, a high school breakup, right? I mean, just yesterday I got 1, 2, 3, 4 text messages. The day before I got one that really is, you know, the most bad boyfriendy of the bunch. It said, quote, I texted you, my sons texted you, Now I'm texting you again. Will you step up? And you know, as this is going on, I mean, I wrote a story with my colleague Andrew Romano a couple days ago. It all flows together now. But it looked at, you know, the possibility that Trump is going to be some kind of president in exile. Right. And that could include launching a media network. That's something his allies are rumbling about, running again. Obviously, no matter what, being vocal on Twitter in addition to potentially rallies. And we also dove into the fine print on these, you know, bombardments of fundraising requests people are getting. And it literally makes clear that the priority is not so-called, you know, election defense. The money is actually primarily allocated to A, initially paying off debt that Trump's campaign had before this big haul, and then B, to Save America, which is a leadership PAC that, you know, the president founded, I believe, on November 8th. So that was like 3 days after the election was called. And, you know, that is a campaign vehicle. There's no question about it. The question is, will he ultimately use that just to, you know, raise money and get involved in other races and be an influence on the political scene? Or will he use that, you know, as some have used a leadership PAC, as a precursor to his own campaign? But there's no question he is on the trail and it's already started. I do want to say, I think Jen made a really important point that, you know, in a lot of ways, this is serious and this is a power grab. And, you know, sources close to the president who told me he's looking at a media outlet, told me he's looking at potentially running again, used the phrase he's, quote, keeping all his options open. And that does include, you know, a power grab. If Republicans were willing to help him in that and go down that road, he's absolutely ready and hoping that they do so. And it's such a weird thing because that is so important and dangerous that we're sort of in the middle of this, you know, authoritarian attempt to undermine an election, but the execution on every level is so inept that it's definitely not working, and it almost seems funny, but it really is serious.
Yeah, I'm glad you opened the door to the transition to the legal team, the crack legal team led by master attorney Rudy Giuliani. What's he getting? $20,000 a day, coming up with some bizarre arguments. They haven't won one case so far as I know so far out of over dozens filed. But here's the kind of team examples, Sudeep, of what Rudy Giuliani has put forward. Out in Michigan, he had one witness sitting alongside of him testify about fraud in the Asian American vote. Here she is.
I think all Chinese look alike. So how would you tell? If some chow shows up, you can be anybody and you can vote.
Yep, all Chinese look alike, so how can you tell? Must have been massive fraud. And then, of course, we had Joe DeGeneva, a former special counsel who was a member of Rudy Giuliani's team, who was asked on Newsmax about Chris Krebs, fired by Donald Trump because he dared assert that this was the most secure election in our history. And Joe DeGeneva had his opinion about what should happen to Mr. Krebs.
Anybody who thinks that this election went well, like that idiot Krebs, who used to be the head of...
Oh, yeah, the guy that was on 60 Minutes last night.
That guy is a Class A moron. He should be drawn and quartered, taken out at dawn and shot.
Is this the best legal team, Sudeep, that Trump can put together?
Yeah, this is the crack team, the A team. That's right. You know, there's a saying we're all familiar with: don't read the comments on our stories. Don't read. Don't get into the muck. And I feel like the past month has basically been reading the comments out loud. The entire legal team and the things they're saying are some of just like the most like you had a racist comment there. You had a death threat essentially, or a call for death. You had just some of the most absurd conspiracy theories coming out. You just wonder, like, are people actually thinking this? And it turns out, yes, they're thinking it and they're saying it and they're trying to turn it into their argument. And what's remarkable is that there are tens of millions of people who are buying it. That's really the most, I think, the longer lasting effect of this. There are people who hear this and think, yeah, I get that. I hear it. And that's what I think we should all fear is what the effect of that will be over time.
Jen, one of the things that they haven't put forward, as even Lindsey Graham said, is any evidence.
Of course, that's been the situation the entire time. I mean, again, it's getting back to the very basic core of what is happening. There is no evidence of widespread fraud. And what gets me is that so many of this would not be happening. This would not be possible that this message were taking hold if Republicans who know better in the Senate and in the House and elsewhere were saying what they already know to be true, which is that there is no fraud. There was no widespread fraud, and they just won't say it. And you can't have someone like Trump. Well, because they are worried that they will alienate themselves from Trump's very strong base of supporters for their own political purposes. So it's fear. It's political fear that for their own, you know, reelection purposes and their own base of support. And it's pathetic. They're spineless. This, you're supposed to be a leader and, you know, not to get all like Constitution 101, you know, in a morning progressive podcast here, but like, you know, they have a job to do. They were elected to be United States senators and members of Congress. And when they know the president is lying about widespread fraud in a presidential election, it seems like a very simple response to say that's not true. And they just won't say it. And so now spreading out from this, you've got various clips everywhere that will forever be in the records of people like Senator John Cornyn and people like Senator Roy Blunt going on Sunday shows and refusing to say that Joe Biden has won the election now, almost a month after, you know, Joe Biden was declared the winner. So you would never have this acceptance of what Trump is saying by so many ill-informed people if you didn't have the system of Republicans supporting him, you know, behind him. And it's just, you can't have an autocratic leader without people around him helping him. And he's got that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Hunter, you're down at the White House, at least checking in online, if not there physically. Is there any substance to all these rumors now that there's going to be a flood of premature pardons or protective pardons, whatever they call them, like for Rudy Giuliani or for Donald Trump's family members or for Donald Trump himself?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to see these rumors as a good old DC trial balloon, right? And there's certainly clear indications that this is a strategy the president is willing to use. I mean, you know, he pardoned Dinesh D'Souza, which seemed pretty purely political, you know, I think 2 years ago. More recently, he gave the full pardon to Flynn, a man who pleaded guilty. So, you know, I'm not sure what the legal merit was there. And of course, the pardon to Roger Stone, right? So he's shown a lot of willingness to A, get into legal jeopardy with his allies, and B, to, you know, then issue these pardons. And, you know, one thing as we talk about the financial realities of this, you know, evidence-free, baseless election challenge, according to the New York Times reporting on the president's tax returns, he has hundreds of millions of dollars about to come due. And I think that's a big motivation for the media ambitions, the desperate cash raising. There's also multiple investigations into him. So there's potential legal jeopardy there. And then Rudy Giuliani, you've got a guy who, if you read his divorce filings, also in tons of financial jeopardy, you know, really dire straits. And he, I think, opened himself up to legal jeopardy, at least a bit, with this whole laptop adventure he went on this summer, where he clearly had hacked files obtained from God knows where that he was attempting to interject the election. So, you know, we see the signs of major trouble for the president and his allies, and we see the willingness to pardon. I think that's very real and very serious.
Right. Okay. We haven't even spent much time yet, except at the very top, talking about the next administration, the president-elect, who has put forth already a lot of people that he wants to be the leaders of his administration. So let's switch from Donald Trump to Joe Biden right after this little break here on the Bill Press Roundtable, Friday, December 4. And today's roundtable is brought to you by a very special sponsor, my wife, Carol. Yes, it is getting colder, and this is the holiday season, so you're looking for something very special for yourself or for someone you love. I advise you to take a look at Carol Press's website, carolpressscarves.com, and her beautiful hand-woven scarves. Every one of them is different. Every one of them is hand-woven. Every one of them is a work of art. Many different colors and designs to choose from. So go to Carol's website, again, carolpressscarves.com. Pick out something very special for yourself or someone you love for this holiday season. And there'll be a link to Carol Press Scarves at the in the notes to this podcast as well. So do yourself a favor. Get a Carol Press scarf for the holidays.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back with today's roundtable. Sudeep Reddy joins us from Politico, Jen Bendry from Huffington Post, and Hunter Walker from Yahoo News. So, Sudeep, Joe Biden has been out in front almost every day up in Wilmington, Delaware, a good deal of time introducing people that he's nominated to be leaders of his new administration. Collectively, Sudeep, it looks like the third term of Barack Obama.
It really does. These are all names that we've heard about so much. His Secretary of State nominee, Tony Blinken, his Treasury Secretary to be Janet Yellen, the top leadership in his White House in other key posts. These are all names that we've heard about before, and it almost sounds like, yeah, this is a third term and extension, but it's also a bit of a do-over. How would they do it differently when they know that they're going to have resistance from Republicans and need to figure out a way to get things done in the old-fashioned bipartisan sense of Washington? Whether they actually can, we'll see. Whether Joe Biden can actually be the one who forges that. But it is remarkable how little attention these nominees are getting for their scandals or for anything else that we remember from the beginning of the Trump administration with so many nominees.
Right. How about what are the prospects for confirmation, Jen? What do you hear? I mean, you know, traditionally, with few exceptions, the new president gets to pick the members of his team. That used to be the tradition. Does it continue?
I think at the moment, Republicans have signaled that, you know, they're prepared to support, quote unquote, reasonable, nominees that are mainstream people, you know, giving the usual lines they give. I think the only nominee I've seen so far who has really angered some Republicans is Neera Tanden, who was named to run OMB. And I am skeptical. I have questions about that nomination in the first place. Like, I'm not convinced that that was a nomination in good faith. It just seems that sort of out of step with some of the other nominees that Biden's put forward. Perhaps it's like a test of throwing out a progressive and letting Republicans say no way, and then they could come back and put somebody else forward who's not as progressive. But we'll see on that. But I think for the moment that Republicans are kind of, being very open-minded in their way, and they haven't really raised any concerns with anybody yet, because it is the executive administration. These aren't judicial nominees who are, you know, going to lifetime posts. These are the executive team. And, you know, everybody agrees you have to have people in place for your executive team.
One set of announcements, Hunter, that I found quite interesting were the White House press team and communications team at the White House, starting out with Press Secretary Jen Psaki. That's going to make a big difference at the White House, right?
Yeah, I actually did a story on this with my colleague Brittany Shepard about how Biden's media operation would be very different from Trump's. The biggest thing is that they have committed to restoring press briefings at the White House, which for vast stretches of the Trump administration, including this most recent one, had basically gone extinct. President-elect Biden also chose an all-woman press team, including, as you said, Jen Psaki and Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. There's a few other folks in there. But one thing that, you know, President Trump was quite transparent on prior to the election and he sort of laid low were these freewheeling sessions where on the lawn or in the Oval Office, he would just kind of hold forth and rapid fire take questions from, you know, crowded scrums of reporters. I don't think, even though we will see a briefing, that we will see that return under Joe Biden. I talked to David Axelrod, who, you know, is a senior advisor from the Obama-Biden administration. And when I asked if he expected Biden, who obviously, you know, has a reputation for gaffes and has been closely guarded by staff, if Axelrod expected Biden to hold forth as Trump has, you know, in these direct Q&As, and he said, quote, not a chance, not a chance, not a chance.
It's certainly not Biden's style, right?
I mean, it might be Biden's style, but I think his staff has really tried to make sure that's not his style. This was like Jen O'Malley Dillon ran a notably leak-free campaign.
Yeah, no, indeed. So, Sandeep, are we going to see, we know that Joe Biden he keeps saying, we've got to heal, we have to unite the nation. You know, to get anything done, he's going to have cooperation from Republicans in Congress. Whatever happens in Georgia, we'll get to that next. He's going to have cooperation, starting with Mitch McConnell. Is that in the cards, do you think? Any possibility?
I don't know if he's going to get the kind of cooperation he wants from Mitch McConnell, but we're already seeing signs that other senators are just tired of the old way. And with the stimulus negotiations, to see a group of moderate Republicans come together and propose something that's going to disappoint everyone in some way, that is basically how negotiations are supposed to work in Congress, that nobody's going to be perfectly happy. Everyone has to give something up. That is the essence of how you work across the aisle. And so the fact that Joe Biden stepped up and has effectively endorsed that approach shows that he's willing to take a quieter, softer approach that's not going to make everyone happy, but will at least lead to some incremental progress.
Okay, so let's get to Georgia. Now, we know the president is going down there this weekend to support Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, but a lot of people are worried that the president is going to go down there and just trash the Georgia elections system, which may keep some people away from the polls. But it's not just the president himself, the president's legal team. At a rally just a couple of days ago, one of his chief members of his team, again, Lynn Wood in this case, had this message for Republicans in Georgia.
We're not going to go vote on January 5th in another machine made by China. You're not going to fool Georgians again. If Kelly Loeffler wants your vote, if David Perdue wants your vote, they've got to earn it. They've got to demand publicly Brian Kemp call a special session of the Georgia legislature. And if they do not do it, they have not earned your vote. Don't you give it to them. Why would you go back and vote in another rigged election?
I find that unbelievable. Jen, the message is Republicans, two Senate seats are on the line. Stay home.
It is. You know, I'm a huge soccer fan, and we talk a lot about self-owns in soccer. When, you know, the ball, you're guarding your own goal, and then you bonk the ball into your own goal, and you just scored on your own team. This whole Georgia situation is just an incredible self-own. It's all blowing up in their faces that they have tried to convey this message of fraud, and yet now they need people to believe that there won't be fraud when they vote for these senators. It's just like, it's just come full circle. And there's a part of me that is delighted to watch this play out, because it's just, they just did this to themselves. It didn't have to be like this. But it is, you know, but in a more serious sense, you know, the fact that you've got these people out there encouraging people not to vote, and then people saying, yeah, I'm not going to vote. That's just, again, fueling the same thing that comes back to what Trump is doing. He's trying to fuel illegitimacy, you know, in Biden's win. You know, don't trust elections at all. Don't trust democratic institutions. And it's just all coming back to that same really dangerous message that is infiltrating our whole election system now. So, you know, it's going to take Republicans to get in there and say, hey, you know, look, the facts are that there was not widespread fraud in the presidential election. And the facts are that as Republicans, we need you to turn out to help us win these Senate races if you care about, you know, Republicans remaining in control. It's very simple stuff. And I saw that last night, you know, it must be at a point where they're sending off like serious sirens in the Republican Party, because there was a fundraiser last night in Georgia hosted by some very high name Georgia Republicans, but also people who were there included Lindsey Graham, Tim Scott, Todd Young, all senators, Republican senators from other states, and a special appearance by Mitch McConnell. So when you've got all these people coming into Georgia for this fundraiser, it's clearly these are very important seats for Republicans to win. This is going to determine control of the Senate. But they're really, the fact that they're all going in all, you know, to save these two seats tells me that this is a serious problem for them. They're actually really worried about this when they, in theory, they should win these seats. These are longtime Republican seats. So it's just an incredible situation of them having to clean up their own mess as the mess is still happening. And I don't know how they're going to deal with the people who are out there saying don't vote, because they're still out there having rallies. So yeah, I don't know where this is going right now.
And it gets beyond, as you indicated, the funny lot, the hilarious idea that Republicans are going to help themselves by staying home, when there are actually threats of violence against state officials. I'm sure you saw this week that Gabriel Sterling, who is a member of the Secretary of State's team overseeing the election, came forth in a very emotional statement in front of reporters, directing the President of the United States, begging the President of the United States to back off. Here he is.
It has all gone too far. Joe Genova today asked for Chris Krebs, a patriot who ran CISA, to be shot. A 20-something tech in Gwinnett County today has death threats and a noose put out saying he should be hung for treason. It has to stop. Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language. Senators, you have not condemned this language or these actions. My boss, Secretary Raffensperger, his address is out. They have people doing caravans in front of their house. They've had people come onto their property. Trisha, his wife of 40 years, is getting sexualized threats through her cell phone. This is elections. This is the backbone of democracy. And all of you who have not said a damn word are complicit in this. Mr. President, stop inspiring people to commit potential acts of violence. Someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to get shot. Someone's going to get killed.
As you indicated, Hunter, this is serious stuff.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about the dangers from President Trump's dispute of the election, his baseless dispute of the election, you know, the situation in Georgia, where, I mean, by the way, despite this, I mean, Dem operatives right now tell me they're not very optimistic, but this situation where Republican voters are saying they might not vote, it could flip that. It could flip that dynamic. And it also shows undermining trust in you know, the democratic process here. That's one danger from this. But here in Georgia, we have discussion of a, you know, much more concrete and immediate danger, which is actual violent threats. And I mean, I can't say I'm surprised, A, because this rhetoric around, you know, calling the election fraudulent is so incendiary, but B, we've seen violent rhetoric throughout the Trump administration. I mean, Steve Bannon was talking about beheading Dr. Fauci. I think that clip from the Legal Challenge you had earlier had some pretty violent language. We've seen the open carrying at rallies. We saw Kyle Rittenhouse shoot people in Kenosha. And as a reporter covering this administration, I'm frankly pretty sure my fellow panelists may have similar experiences, but I've gotten multiple death threats to my wife, to my mother, to me personally. And this is the political environment that we live in now, and it's quite stark.
And Sudeep, in many ways, everything rides on what happens in Georgia, right? Because we know that would even up the Senate 50-50. And if Joe Biden is able to get anything done, it may depend on Kamala Harris being able to break the tie. So this is a hugely important election on January 5.
It is hugely important. You wonder whether some Republicans, it's just like in the back of my head, I keep thinking maybe some of them actually want to lose this so they can just fight the Democrats for the next 4 years, or at least the next 2 years in the Senate. But it is hugely consequential. There's so much that would be different on stimulus, on tax policy, on so many other fronts. Even with the filibuster remaining in the Senate, you could do a lot of things with a 50-50 Senate in favor of Democrats. And so that's just what's so remarkable about this. And it also shows the long-term scarring that we're going to have here from people like Gabriel Sterling and others who are just wondering what has happened here, what has happened to this party, what has happened to our country, where you have people just believing such nonsense over and over. And I think that is going to be one of those takeaways that we'll have from this weird post-election moment.
Yeah. Republican Governor Brian Kemp, Republican Secretary of State Raffensperger, and Republican Elections Chief Gabriel Sterling. And the president has attacked them all, right, because he didn't win Georgia. What a week it has been. And by the way, early voting in Georgia starts actually on December 14, a week from this coming Monday, the election itself on January 5, with, as we all said here, a lot at stake. Great roundup, guys. A great look back at the week. But let's not let you go. There must have been some story this week that, whether it had to do with politics or Donald Trump or Joe Biden or whatever, caught your attention, made you stop in your tracks and say, "Ah, that was interesting or funny or serious or worth thinking about." Who starts us off? Jen, you want to go?
Sure. So my story of the week is more a photo than a story. This week, Mark Kelly was sworn into the Senate. And he's the new senator from Arizona and Democrat. And there's a photo that someone screenshotted from the swearing in on the Senate floor that was, you know, aired on C-SPAN. Somebody screenshotted an image of it happening. And this, it is just the best picture of the week. It is a photo that shows the back of Mike Pence, the vice president who swears in new senators. It shows his back with Mark Kelly with his hand up, you know, taking the oath with his hand on the Bible. But then standing there with Mark Kelly is the other senator from Arizona, Kyrsten Sinema, who is standing there in a zebra print jacket and a bright purple wig and in her glasses and then her mask over her mouth, just face to face with Mike Pence as he's swearing in Mark Kelly over to the side. And her eyes are closed, and it looks insane because Mike Pence is such a you know, conservative, uptight guy, and you know, there's the talk of him not being allowed to be alone with a woman if his, you know, his wife's not around, and he's just like very traditional and conservative, and he has to stand there and swear in a Democratic senator with this outrageous outfit in front of him, and like, and Kirsten's eyes are closed, and it's just the whole thing. It looks like she's praying for him, like for Mike Pence. So I strongly encourage anyone who's listening to go look for this photo. I actually tweeted it out. If people want to look at my Twitter feed for it, but it just, you just look at it and it looks like someone just crashed the Senate from a party to help swear in some guy in a suit. And it's great.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I saw the photo and I couldn't figure out who the hell that was.
That would be Senator Kyrsten Sinema with a purple wig on and a zebra print robe.
All right. We'll check it out again. How about you, Hunter?
You know, I was going to pick a story, but Jen inspired me to truly go with my heart, speak my truth, and play a multimedia selection. You know, friend of the Bill Press Pod, Ryan Riley, put up a really great clip from one of Rudy Giuliani's election challenges. And Rudy's just sitting there debating with these local lawmakers who's out of order. And in the middle, you hear a sound, and it unmistakably sounds to me like Rudy, you know, passed some gas. Jen Ellis, who's sitting next to him, another member of the strike force, you know, seems to certainly think so. She just turns around and looks at him really abruptly, and he just keeps on rolling. Rudy just, you know, stank up the room in every sense of the word, now that they're like, what, 1 in 50? And in that case, very literally, I'll sneak in one more, which is, you know, I keep telling you about these Donald Trump text messages. They're great writing. And I got one at 9:10 a.m. as we were doing the pod. It said, "Are you going to claim your gift from the president? We'll hold it for 1 hour. Don't wait. Donate now." And so I clicked this open. I have to claim this gift. And it is the official 2020 Trump Christmas ornament. It says, "We're saying Merry Christmas again." And it says, "Please contribute $45 immediately to claim your free ornament." So it's my free $45 ornament. That's my favorite thing from the week also.
We're saying Merry Christmas again, right? I just want to point out that Rudy Giuliani was paid $20,000 for that fart. Okay.
So. An alleged fart, Bill. Alleged.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Sudeep, can you top that?
I don't think I can, and I won't even try. But my favorite story certainly was eye-popping, and it had to do with the Georgia senator and Senate candidate David Perdue. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's a story from our friends at the New York Times that Perdue, in one Senate term, has made 2,596 trades in his stock portfolio, which if you were added up is equivalent to the next six highest, most prolific traders in office. And it is just the most incredible story of just like, what on earth are you doing to trade a single stock 61 times in 2016, a cybersecurity company, when you're overseeing the cybersecurity subcommittee? Now, the senator says that he has professionals doing this, but what professional would be trading that much? Like, it just, it doesn't happen. And so it doesn't really pass the smell test to have anybody running investments this way. But it is, I think, a remarkable piece about how the Senate is allowed to run free the way it is with lawmakers investing in companies that they oversee.
And you have to wonder how much Senate work he's doing when he's so busy taking care of his stock portfolio, right? Making all these trades. Now, I saw this.
By the way, I have a quick message for Senator Perdue. Yeah. Blue Horseshoe loves Ennicott Steel.
All right, get it.
I want to make sure he hears that one.
I hope he's listening. That's good. All right.
He's definitely listening.
Hunter, my favorite story of the week, Hunter, I was afraid you might grab this one from me, is the new ruling regarding service animals on airplanes. Right. So, you know, for a long time, airlines were willing to accept almost any animal that people claimed was an emotional support animal or a service animal, not just dogs, but including, and this actually happened, turkeys, small horses, pigs, peacocks, and ducks. People had to sit alongside of them. And at any rate, the airlines now say, no, no, no more emotional, so-called emotional support. animals in the cabin. You can, they can fly with you, but you have to pay, and they go in the cargo hold. And the only service animals allowed will be dogs that either can sit in your lap or fit under the seat in front of you. So only dogs, Hunter. You can take your dog as a service animal. But I'm glad, as a frequent flyer, at least before COVID, a frequent flyer, because I won't have to sit alongside of a peacock or a turkey.
But what about Acela? Can I bring my emotional support dog on Acela?
You have to ask Amtrak. I don't know. I didn't see. I guess it depends on what it is. Okay, gang, that was a great roundtable. Thank you so much. Jen, you mentioned following you or checking your Twitter account. Why don't each of you tell us how to follow you on Twitter when you're not on the Bill Press Pod. Jen, you start.
Well, I'm always on the Bill Press Pod, so everybody knows. No, I'm just kidding. It's jbendery@huffpost.com.
All right. Hunter?
Oops, that's my email. Oh. It's jbendery.
@jbendery, right?
Yep.
Okay. Hunter?
Well, when you don't find me on this podcast in your hearts or in Jen's email, I'm on Twitter @HunterW.
@HunterW. All right. And Sudeep?
I am @Reddy, R-E-D-D-Y, on Twitter.
All right. There you go. Hey, thank you, Jen. Thank you, Hunter. Thank you, Sudeep. And thanks to all of you for listening. Don't forget to check out carolpressscarves.com for your holiday shopping. Meanwhile, stay strong, stay safe, follow the guidelines of the CDC and the governor of your state for this holiday season, and then come back and see us again on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.